The slide ran in a north-to-south direction to the river. The river was about 25 feet across at the base of the slide. A large pool filled with boulders, the size of cars, and more than 60 feet long, absorbed the runoff from the slide. 20 feet to the east of the bottom of the slide, the large pool was pinched off by a 2-foot-high step in the river. On the other side of this step, or mini waterfall, lay a small crescent-shaped pool with a soft sandy beach at its center. The beach was elevated about 5 feet above the crescent pool and contained remnants of a camp left from Devin's last visit. Devin made his way to the step area and then across its face to the other side of the river where the camp was. Several cantaloupe-sized rocks that had been charred by many fires sat in a semicircle next to a ledge that poked out of the sand at the uphill end of the small beach. Torn pieces of a green plastic bag, bits of paper plates, and some white plastic utensils were scattered around the sandy area. Devin thought to himself that some animals had dug up the garbage they had buried last time. He would have to carry the garbage out this time. From the beach area, a continuous canopy of greenery covered the length of the river as far as could be seen. No direct sunlight reached the river here. Even so, the heat persisted. The air temperature was over 105 degrees. The water was snowmelt from the mountains upstream and was just above freezing. The muted rumble of downstream whitewater was accented by the bubbling trickle of flow over the small stepfall in front of the sandy area. The water smelled crisp and cool. Zeke stumbled out of the tree line and slid the last 15 feet, splashing into the large pool. He kicked and kicked his way across the river, then climbed up the steep slope downriver from the sandy cramp area. He ran through the bushes and onto the sand to Devin, saving his wetness to share. Devin exclaimed, turning from Zeke's shake-off. Couldn't you do that over there? Zeke's tail wagged furiously. Dirt and leaves poured over the end of the slide into the river, announcing Carl's arrival. Carl stopped on the rocks at the edge of the river and spotted Devin. Carl looked around, then made his way to the step area to cross over to the sandy campsite. Rich came out of the tree line carrying his pack and the backpack dredge that Devin had left. Devin waded out in the small pool over to Carl and Rich to take their packs and bring them back to the camp area. Rich and Carl stood at the edge of the small waterfall that was about 5 feet across. How do we get across this? Rich asked Devin. Devin waded back out to them and grabbed Carl's hand and pulled him into the pool. Carl splashed in waist-deep and immediately began drawing in rapid, short breaths while his face looked like a scolded child. Holy shit, that's cold, Carl said as soon as he could catch his breath. Jump in, Rich. It's the only way you're going to get that dirt off you, Devin said. Rich jumped in just behind Carl where the water was nearly 5 feet deep. He scrambled to the shallow water while sucking in rapid, short breaths as Carl did. Devin laughed and climbed back out to the beach area. Devin laid out the tarp on the sand, then drove in tent spikes at each corner to keep it from sliding. At each corner of the tarp, a piece of small diameter rope about 4 feet in length was tied. Devin tied the food pack to the uphill corner of the tarp to ensure that a small animal didn't drag the food away in the night. Carl and Rich set the sleeping bags on the tarp, then stacked the ropes and tools on the ledge of a rock behind the campfire area. The gas cans were stacked away from the camp and tied to a tree. Devin pumped up the tire tube that the dredge floated on and assembled the dredge, while Rich and Carl strung out the hoses and securing lines. Once everything looked right and the preliminary work was completed, they settled in for lunch. Rich passed out a can of Denison's chili, a small can of peaches, and a plastic spoon to each person, then poured some dog kibble in a pile for Zeke. The troop ate in silence, looking around at the gray sculpted rock with long streaks of white lines running this way and that. All right, let's get some gold, Devin said. Devin picked up a gold pan and scooped up some material from the edge of the pool. Here, this is how you pan for gold. Devin let water into the pan from the river and started to move the pan back and forth, swirling the material in the pan. He pushed larger rocks out of the pan and swirled the smaller ones out in the circular rocking motion. Within a few minutes, the pan had only sandy material and water in it. Carl and Rich copied what Devin was doing with their own gold pans. Now just rock it back and forth. You can see the white sand at the top and the black sand at the bottom. Wash the white sand out with light jerking motions, the black sand is made up of irons and pyrites. The only thing heavier than the black sand is gold. They'll both be at the bottom of the pan, Devon said. He did this for several more minutes, and little flakes of gold could be seen scattered in the black sand. I got some, exclaimed Carl. Three small flecks of gold, no bigger than grains of sand, peeked out in Carl's swirling layer of black sand. I didn't get any, Rich said, staring intently into his pan while pushing the black sand around with his finger. Get another scoop and try again, Devon answered. How do we get these flakes out, Carl asked. Devon unscrewed the top of a small aluminum canister, brushed his black sand and gold bits into it, then passed it to Carl. Don't bother now. Just put your black sand in here and we'll pan it out tonight. Carl brushed his black sand and gold flecks into the canister and screwed the top back on. Carl and Rich got another scoop of material from the pool and sat down to start over. Devon grabbed his wetsuit, then waded into the small pool, took his clothes off, and stepped into the wetsuit. Toss me my mask and snorkel, Devon said to Carl. Carl tossed them to him. Devon spit into the mask, rubbed the spit around the glass, rinsed it in the cold water, then put it on, and poked his face in the water to see the bottom. Rich and Carl continued to swirl the water around their pans looking for gold, while Zeke curled up for a nap. Devon waded into the outside curve of the crescent pool with his face in the water and snorkel out. He pushed rocks around with his feet trying to see how much material was covering bedrock. Bedrock looks like the sides of the river, smooth contours of undulating gray rock with streaks of white quartz running through in places. The gold settles to the bedrock as it is the heaviest thing in the river. Devon wanted to be in the part of the stream that was moving slowest to improve the chance that any gold had not been washed away with the swift current. There was a lot of sandy material here. Let's get that dredge going, Devon said as he pulled his snorkel out of his mouth. Carl and Rich didn't look up. They were lost in the pans. There had to be gold in every scoop. They had to find it. A couple more swirls, a couple more swishes. If it was in there, they were going to find it. Devon stepped out of the water and touched Rich on the shoulder. Rich, give me a hand with a dredge. Rich looked up at him. I still haven't found any. Don't worry about it. Once I pull up the material from the bottom, you'll find plenty. Carl set his pan down. Rich poured the gas mix into the tank while Devon secured a line to the dredge. Carl attached the suction hose. Devon waded back in and pulled the dredge behind him. Tie it off right there, Devon said. He positioned the dredge sluice box to dump the tailings over the small falls into the larger pool, then pulled the suction hose to the slow water area he had just been pushing rocks around in. Every 10 minutes or so, we'll dump the sluice box riffles into a pan and you guys can pan out the gold. In the meantime, just get another scoop and get to panning, Devon said. Rich pulled the starter cord and the dredge rumbled to life. In a moment, clear water began to cascade across the sluice box. He watched Devon as he lowered his whole body into the icy water. The suction hose began to buck and jerk. Then the water flow through the dredge's sluice box darkened as material from the bottom of the river rolled along its length. The dredge's suction hose was only 2 inches in diameter. The engine was the type found on handheld weed whackers. The engine was fixed to a pump that drew water from below it through a 2-inch hose that then tapered to a 1-inch hose. That 1-inch hose ran out the length of the 2-inch diameter suction hose and fed the rushing water back up, creating a vacuum. This vacuum pressure pulled the material from the bottom of the river, sent it up the suction hose and over the sluice box. The sluice box was about 3 feet long and 1 foot wide, with 4-inch hide sidewalls. A piece of carpet ran along its bottom, and a series of ladder riffles created areas of low pressure attracting the heavy gold to settle in. The lighter rocks and sand roll across the sluice box and drop off the end back into the water. Devon pushed the suction hose into the loose material while he rolled rocks too large to pass through out of the way. He worked back and forth in an area about 4 feet wide and 4 feet across. Material cascaded into the depression made from all around. How far to bedrock? How much material had to be moved? Any large nuggets would be resting next to the bedrock. He worked on. His exposed arms and neck burned in the freezing water rushing past him. The muffled noise of the dredge seemed distant to him. Like Darth Vader, he inhaled and exhaled over and over again. For him, the sound of his breathing washed out everything else. A flicker of brightness appeared for a brief moment. The material continued to fall into the suction hose. Another flicker, A drum began to beat. It beat louder. It was his heart. He could hear his heart above the breathing. The flicker became a flash. Something tumbled in the material. His heart pounded in his chest. He stopped breathing when he saw it. Gnarled, lustrous beauty in the shape of a piece of popcorn, but unmistakably gold. His head felt as though it would explode. He let out a grunt and thrust his hand to catch it before it fell into the suction hose. His heart pounded in his ears. He got it. Devin jumped out of the water screaming through his snorkel. He held the nugget up high into the sky as he ripped the mask and snorkel from his face. Yahoo! Rich put down his pan and waded out to Devin to see the nugget. Carl inspected the sluice box for more nuggets. Rich crowded in next to Devin to get a closer look as Devin turned it in his hand. Nugget was lumpy and smooth. It was very heavy, almost an ounce. Carl turned off the dredge so he could empty the sluice box material into his pan. He looked over at Devin's prize impatiently. Let me see it. Devin tossed the nugget to Carl. Both Rich and Carl held their breath as they watched the nugget fly through the air in what seemed like slow motion. Carl caught it in one hand and cupped it with the other, to be sure not to drop it. Damn, that's heavy, Carl said as he turned it over and over. We'll put it in with the tailings so all the gold stays together until we split it, Devin said, climbing out onto the bank. Your turn to dredge, Rich. Just keep working the hole I've been excavating. You should be able to find a couple more like that. Devin then tossed Rich the dive mask and snorkel. Carl and Rich passed the nugget back and forth a couple of times. They wanted to feel it in their hands. They wanted to somehow understand it. It was like nothing they had ever seen before. It was gold, and it was just laying in the river. What a wonderful thing it was. They wanted more, a lot more. Rich put on the dive mask and snorkel. Once Rich pushed his face into the water, Carl walked to the sandy beach and put the nugget into the canister with the black sand. Zeke could be heard crunching through the underbrush not too far away. Devin was rigging a fishing hook to the small fishing pole. I saw some nice trout while I was dredging. I'm going to try to get some for dinner. Cool, Carl said. Devin stepped over some rocks and then waded into the crescent pool upstream from where Rich was dredging. There's a lot of good material to dredge out in this pool, Devin thought. He stepped over the upstream waterfall that was about a foot high and 12 feet across. The water bubbled over the rocks with a melody lulling Devin into a peacefulness he found in few other places. The upper pool was about 20 feet wide and 40 feet long. No rock pierced the surface of the water along its length. No white water. The water turned and twisted with no effort shown. The surface of the pool was flat. Devin pulled his dive mask over his face and bit into the snorkel. He lay out across the surface, surveyed the bottom, and kicked slowly upstream. Devin had tried to catch fish here before. He found that they would not bite a lure or bait. There was a small bug that lived in a hollowed-out sticks on the bottom of the river that the fish ate. They would scan the bottom looking for the bugs in the sticks. When found, the fish would swim down, pick up the stick in its mouth, suck out the bug, then spit the stick out. It seemed the fish were smart enough to maintain the supply of hollowed-out sticks. It was as if they were farming the bugs. A big 2-pound trout lumbered under Devin. It was a caramel milk color with iridescent hues of shimmering green on its sides. These fish don't seem to have any predators out here, Devin thought. They must die of old age. Imagine that, fish dying of old age. Devin chuckled in his snorkel. Three more swam together up ahead of Devin. Then he saw two more. As Devin swam along, the fish all moved upstream. Soon he would corral them together under the next waterfall, and then he could try to catch one. He needed to find one of those bugs to put on his hook. He scanned the bottom for the stick bugs. Something moved to his right. He dove down and reached for a small stick, and what looked like a black branch on the bottom jerked. Devin recoiled, sucking in water through his submerged snorkel. He dropped the fishing pole and coughed. The pole struck the bottom near the branch. The branch darted towards him. It was a snake. Devin's arms and legs flailed. His body contorted. He even used his head to thrust against the water to escape. Devin let out a scream in the snorkel, blowing large bubbles out like a jet. His eyes were wide, his heart pounding, and he was still coughing out water. Then the snake turned and swam upstream. Devin kept backing up with wide sweeping motions of his arms. He did not want to take his eyes off the snake in case it turned again. Devin stepped out of the upper pool and waded back to the beach area. Carl was dredging now and Rich was panning. Devin looked into the sluice box as he passed it. "How you guys doing? Find any more big ones?" "I saw two the size of peanuts roll into the hose while I was down." Carl panned them out. "They're in the can now." "Carl dredged up a couple of pieces the size of BBs," Rich said as he tipped the pan towards Devin to show him the color in the pan.
"Right on."
"What's this?" Devin pointed a wet backpack with a bulge in it sitting on the rock next to Rich.
"I found a couple of packs up by the gas cans. You must have left them here last time. Anyway, we got so much black sand we needed something bigger to put it in, so I started using that," Rich responded.
"That much, huh?
Great."
Devin took the wetsuit off and hung it on a branch to dry out overnight. He slipped on his cut-off jeans and started fishing through the food bag.
"Are there matches in here? I want to get a fire going so we can have some hot food for dinner."
"They're in there somewhere." Devin started the fire, opened several sea ration cans, then placed them onto hot embers on the edge of the fire. Rich stacked some wood near the fire for later. Carl and Zeke sat on the sand, gazing at the flowing water and the river. Shadows from the ridge tops extinguished the sunlight early deep in the canyon. Dusk lingered at camp. The heat eased up only slightly as the rocks held deep reserves of energy from the day's sun. The orange glow of the fire mixed with the blue-gray palette of shadows that blanketed everything in view. Devin and Rich rested their weary backs against the warm rock wall that jutted out of the sand near the fire. Rich snapped off twigs and tossed them into the crackling fire.
"So, Rich, have you taken Robin out yet?" Devin asked.
"You mean take her out to dinner or something?"
"Anything. Do you go anywhere with her?"
"I went to a church picnic last month. Did you pick her up and take her, or just meet her there?"
"He's afraid of her. That's why Carter's sleeping with her," Carl said over his shoulder.
"Nobody was talking to you," Rich responded.
"What are you talking about, Carl?" Devin asked.
"I saw her coming out of Carter's room twice last week," Carl said. Rich jumped up in a menacing manner. Carl stood up and faced him.
"Hang on. Let's not get excited," Devin said as he got between them. "I'm sure you didn't actually see anything other than the two of them leaving his room, right?"
Carl scowled as he stared into Rich's eyes, not wanting to back down.
"Right," Carl said.
Devin guided Rich back to the spot they had been sitting. Rich and Carl continued to look in each other's eyes without blinking as Rich sat down. Carl bent over and grabbed a sizzling can out of the fire with his bare hands and sat down in the sand, pulled a spoon out of his pocket, and began to share his meal with Zeke.
"Never mind him," Devin said. "He's a jerk. He's just trying to piss me off.
How about we change the subject? I'll tell you about Dara."
"Good idea. Does she live with you and Ned at Ned's house?"
"She lives in a single wide trailer next to the road above Ned's house."
"She's your cousin, right?"
"Her dad, Ned, is my father's cousin. I don't know what that makes her to me. I do know that she's not my first cousin. That means I could marry her in California. I checked."
"Are you going to marry her?"
"No.
I could if I wanted to. I mean, there's no legal restriction."
"Sounds like you want to if you checked into it."
"I tell you the truth, I looked into it because I've been getting closer and closer to her and wanted to know if there was something unnatural about the relationship going further, if it did."
"Are you sleeping with her?"
"No."
"Why not? You said you liked her and she's pretty. Sounds like she likes you too."
"I don't know."
"Nanette, you still have feelings for her?" asked Rich. "I honestly think that I'm over her, but I can't seem to move on. I still don't understand what I did wrong," Devin said, gazing into the crackling embers. "Sometimes I wonder if I could provide a good enough life for us. I'm not sure I can take care of myself, let alone anyone else." He tossed a couple of small twigs in the fire, then looked into Rich's eyes.
"I can't get comfortable with a woman unless I can feel like a man. Unless I'm making a good wage and working towards something, I just don't feel like I have anything to offer."
"Sounds like Nanette brainwashed you," Rich said.
"I don't think so. She may have opened my eyes," Devin said. And then he said, "I guess I always knew that. I just wasn't ready to live it."
"You ready now?"
"I'm getting there.
If we can pull out a fair bit of gold, I'll be ready," Devin said, as he reached for a hot can of beans and Frank's on the fire.